All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of The Weeknd Is Dead here on the Pop Culture Network. Hey, everybody, I'm your host today, Dirt, and welcome to a brand new episode of The Weeknd Is Dead for April 10th, 2017. And this show is mostly going to be a mailbag show. This show is mainly going to be just referring back to fan mail, comments, Facebook messages, messages left on YouTube, stuff on Twitter that people have been leaving for me. And we're going to go through some of this stuff, talk about some of the issues it brings up. We're going to be talking about toy reviews. We're going to be talking about professional wrestling. We're going to be talking about Mad Balls. We're going to be talking about, you know, all sorts of stuff. One thing I wonder if maybe we should talk about is coffee. Coffee's, I don't know if you guys understand this, it's a key part of this show. Without coffee, this show would not exist. So good. So good. And it's off-brand donut shop blend coffee is what I'm drinking, actually. So it's not like I'm drinking expensive coffee or anything like that. Just coffee. Just coffee. Oh, so good. All right. So like I said, we're going to be talking about a bunch of different stuff, but if you guys want to get in on the action, you got any questions, comments you want to throw at me this morning, hop into Twitter. You can catch me at PCN underscore dirt because I am dirt on the Pop Culture Network. So that seems, you know, seems to make sense. I've got a tablet over here open. I've got it running. So in case you guys want to pop up with that, also go to youtube.com. Dirt Mound is the name of my channel, actually, because Dirt was too short, or it was already taken, or I don't remember, whatever, back in 2008 or 6 or whenever I opened the channel. Dirt Mound is the username on YouTube. If you can find my channel, you can hop into the live event and hop into the live chat, and there you go. In fact, if you find me on Twitter, I tweeted out the link to the show, so you can find it that way as well. And I'm just kind of killing time. I'm allowing the video buffer. I don't know if you guys have noticed this. When the show first starts, because we're streaming live, right at the beginning, it is really a lot of times choppy. When we switch between the cameras, it freezes for a second. You have to fill this buffer with video and allow it to kind of guess at what the motions are going to be. And then it learns, like, for instance, those of you that are watching the video, you can see that these areas up here towards the top don't change, right? Unless I flip something to fill the entire screen, that stays the same. This part here, where my big fat mouth is, that moves a lot, and then wherever the hands are. So it learns that there's motion here, there's not as much motion there, and so then it gets smoother and better as it goes along. So I'm just kind of killing time, letting the frame buffers fill up and the motions figure themselves out and do whatever it is they need to do. But I said we're going to respond to some messages and things that we've gotten, and I figured that was now's a good time to do it because there's nothing really pressing right now. We didn't just have a WrestleMania. I don't have a laptop to talk about, you know, that type of stuff. So, like I said, any other questions, comments, anything like that you want to throw out there? First, though, I do want to hop back in to what has turned out to, oddly enough, be kind of a hotbed of discussion. I didn't think this was going to be as big a deal as it was, but as it turns out, Mad Balls are a much bigger deal to a lot of you guys. So when I was talking before doing the review, the unboxing, unbagging, whatever you want to call it from last week, I was looking for, of course the video is mirrored, this guy, Slobulous. Slobulous was the one I had as a kid, and that was the one I was looking for in the new boxes. So I do the review, the video of it, and my buddy Kevin goes out, finds one of the bags somewhere, and he's like, I'll check it out, rips it open. Which one does he get? He gets Slobulous. So this is the new version of Slobulous. He's got the little hipster hair flip thing up there, but otherwise still the same basic idea as the other design. Not quite as disgusting, I don't think, as the original one. This one's a lot more cartoony. You know, but still, nonetheless, thanks, Kev. Shout out to Kevin. All right. But finding the Mad Balls and talking about them, I got several messages from people, quite a few, who were somewhat upset that I was drawing attention to the American Greetings version of Mad Balls, because Kid Robot has a line of Mad Balls out there that are available. And the Mad Balls from American Greetings, those little ones that I was opening, they're $2.99 in the package. Apparently the Kid Robot ones in the blind box, Kid Robot tends to be a little more expensive. From what I've seen, they are $12.99, and they're not baseball size. You know, they seem to be, maybe they're baseball size, I'm not sure. But for $12.99 for one of those versus $2.99 for one of these, that makes a big difference to me. Now, I understand a lot of people like the designs of the Kid Robot ones more, and that's great. I like paying $3 more than I like paying $13. And that's just me. Now, I know some of you guys are like, Dirt, you reviewed a Voltron on popculturenetwork.com last week, you know, $100 toy, and yet you're squabbling over $12.99 versus $2.99. You know, what's the big deal? But honestly, for the package that you get, for the toy that you're getting, $100 for a Voltron is a decent price compared to other collectible, buildable, combiner Voltrons. As opposed to, you know, if you go to Voltron.com and you buy, you go, I would like to have a Voltron on my shelf. Maybe you had one as a kid, you had the Matchbox one, and you're looking for, you know, some kind of like recreation type version or something that you can buy. Those tend to run $250, $300, sometimes $399. So $100 versus $299 makes a big difference, I think, on the value of the toy. So $12.99 versus $2.99. Could I afford the $12.99 for a Kid Robot Mad Ball? Of course. But I much prefer paying the $2.99. I'm old, I'm cheap. You know, that's definitely a part, I think, of the whole deal. But I think it's important to keep in mind the cost of things when you're doing a review, which brings us to another, well, almost, we're going to get to another topic here in just a second, talking about ethics in toy reviewing. And we'll get into a whole conversation there, but when you're doing a toy review, I think it's important to know the price, because that price difference does make a big deal as far as I'm concerned. Now, I did notice that American Greetings has larger size Mad Balls that they sell that are, I don't know, maybe softball size. You know, I'm not the best sports guy, I'll admit, but I think they're roughly softball size. I don't know how much they cost. I'm guessing they cost way more than $2.99. And they're, you know, again, the foamy, not a rubber ball, but a foam ball. But here's the thing. And this may be difficult for a lot of people to understand. So I'm going to see if I can explain this in a way that makes sense. But here's probably the whole thing about the Mad, and like when I'm getting, you know, emails and Facebook messages and comments on the YouTube page from people who are upset, like legitimately upset, because I'm somehow taking away from the Kid Robot ones by showing the American Greetings ones. There is actually kind of this underlying industry secret that some of you don't know about. And technically it works out something along these lines. See if you can follow this. You can choose to buy whichever one you want. I just heard like thousands of heads just, okay, well, let's be fair to this show. I heard a couple, maybe one, you know, blowing up. Yeah. If you like the Kid Robot ones more and you're willing to pay $12.99 as opposed to $2.99 for a smaller one from American Greetings, you're allowed to do that. Am I the first person in your life to let you know that? I mean, that seems like a no-brainer. But look, I'm not trying to be, well, I am trying to be hard on you a little bit, but it goes into that idea of the fanboyism. You know, we get a lot of people who when you talk about things like toys, you talk about things like comic books, everything is going to be an opinion. It's very hard to have a straight, analytical, factual-only discussion about something like a toy or a movie or a comic book or a video game, because you're going to like something more than somebody else. They're going to like something less than you like. There are certain aspects that are going to be more important to another person. We see that in politics. I don't know if you just happened to notice the presidential election that happened last year. 90% of everything in that election was about personalities and opinions, and almost nothing was factual in that entire campaign from either side. I'm not picking sides on this one. But it's still... It still boggles my mind the way people will fight over certain properties and certain opinions that they have. And, you know, I mean, I'll do it too sometimes, because the thing is, I'll state an opinion and then someone will tell me my opinion is wrong for whatever reason. So it's like, what else do? You come back and, well, your opinion's wrong, jackass. You know, I mean, what else is there to do in one of those type situations? But coffee break. One of the key things about fanboyism is that it doesn't make sense. Now, it's one thing to have a preference, right? You can say, well, I prefer DC Comics over Marvel Comics because of the tightly integrated universe, because it's not all set in New York City, because the characters a lot of times seem more fantastic and more amazing and outrageous, more over the top, whereas Marvel tries to ground them more in reality. DC does a lot more with the time travel and the crisis and the rebooting of the universe and parallel universes and whatever. And that's a preference, and that's an opinion, you know, and that's valid to have an opinion over the other. But I don't say that because I only buy DC Comics. I don't only buy DC Comics. I buy too many comics, but I buy a lot of different comics from a lot of different companies. You know, I buy Grim Fairy Tales from Xenoscope. I'm giving the relaunch a try because the last series ended well. It started pretty terrible, but it ended well. So, you know, I buy Marvel. I buy some DC. I buy some Dark Horse. I buy a lot of different companies, a lot of different books, a lot of different characters. Even though I have a preference towards DC, and a lot of that is actually probably because of the Super Friends cartoon being on TV all the time when I was a kid. You know, you had several different Super Friends cartoon shows. They were replaying the Batman shows. All you really had for Marvel were a couple of Incredible Hulk TV movies that weren't all that great, and Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And that was, you know, that was the war for the TV screen as when I was a child. And so that's probably why I got into DC more. But you know, I don't hate everything that Marvel puts out, and I don't not buy Marvel comics because that fanboyism attack on each other just doesn't make sense. I mean, think about this. Have you ever been in a conversation with somebody talking about TV shows you like, and you're like, well, you know, I mean, the sitcoms on ABC are okay, but I only watch shows on CBS. Who would ever say that? I mean, maybe the president of programming for the network, but otherwise, nobody gets into that conversation. Like, that is not a thing. You know, it's not the Battle of the Network Stars as a fun, you know, competition in the 80s was fine, but that's not the fight that people have. And I don't know why it has to happen in comics. There's this idea that if you buy a Superman comic, you cannot buy a Spider-Man. Does that make any sense? No, of course not. Buy both. If you like the Kid Robot Madballs, buy the Kid Robot Madballs and buy an American Greetings one if you want to. It's a free country. You're allowed to. I don't know if this is the news that's the first time reaching people's ears, but there it is. I laid it out for you. All smooth and nice and easy. Now, one thing we talked about a minute ago, though, was the Voltron review that I did last week, talking about that toy, and it was an expensive toy. You know, it was $100 or so to get all of those pieces and to put it together. And, you know, again, some people are like, well, you know, $100, that seems really expensive for a toy. But like I said, buying other Voltrons is going to cost you a lot more money. So this question came up with doing toy reviews. I think it's important when you're doing a toy review that the price is a factor in your overall enjoyment. The same way I would look at like a car or a computer, for instance. Alienware makes a gaming laptop that is a fantastic, sexy beast. It's got the best processors, the best memory, the best graphics cards, the fastest hard drive. The motherboard is filled with memory caches for running different things, so nothing bottlenecks and nothing slows down, and it'll cost you $4,700. Well, that's great. I'd love to have one. If Alienware would like to send one to me for a review, I'll be more than happy to take it, but I'm going to let people know that it costs $4,700. So with that in mind, if I can find a laptop that's $250 and it does what I need it to do, which is not playing No Man's Land on 350-inch monitors, side by side doing the panoramic view, if it's doing what I need and it's decently priced, then I'm going to prefer that more than the one that costs almost $5,000. I mean, that's just a natural, I think, tendency we have when we look at products, is the price should be a factor. A Lamborghini is a nice car. I've got a Corolla, because a Corolla is a whole lot cheaper than a Lamborghini. How it happens to work out. Plus, I bought it used and it was available and I just had money. I could write a check and just buy it outright and not make payments and whatever. So nonetheless, the price of something, I think, is important, which brings up an issue when someone sends you an item for review. I don't know how many of you guys have been around for a long time. Several years ago, I used to work on a show called That New Toy Smell. It was here on the Pop Culture Network. And one of the problems that we had for a number of reasons was we got samples of toys from different toy companies to review on the show. They sent them to us for free so that we could open them up, review them, talk about them, which would then, they hoped, would generate some buzz and make people want to buy them. And on more than one occasion, we had issues where a toy was not the highest quality it could have been. Let me put it that way. There were some issues. But the person reviewing it did not want to damage the relationship they had with the toy company that was sending free toys. Now, some of you can do the math. Congratulations. But this does create, I think, a real significant problem. And I see this a lot. I'll be honest. I record, counting this podcast, I do 4 podcasts a week. 2 that I produce, I'm sitting there listening to them while they're working on them, doing stuff behind the scenes, and then I, make sure they get out to the internets so that people can watch them, listen to them, whatever. And then 2 that I'm on. And beyond those shows, I really don't watch anyone's podcasts. I don't listen to anyone's podcasts. There are some people who do reviews of stuff on YouTube. The 8-Bit Guy, I like a lot of his stuff. I like Lawn TV, does a lot of good stuff, reviewing stuff on YouTube. There are certain things that, but I don't watch everything, just kind of pick through it, watch the stuff that I think I'm interested in. But I don't really watch a lot of stuff anymore, because I used to watch a lot of toy reviews. We do some here on the website. Nick Ochoa, John Prof, the Geek, they'll do some stuff and send them in. And of course, I watch those and post those on the website. But I don't watch a lot of other stuff out there. Now, Grimmy sometimes will send me a link to something, or if I see something from him pop up and it's a figure I'm not always familiar with, or something like, I may watch it, something I just did, I may watch it to, see what they think versus what I think and what I missed, because I'm an idiot. But for the most part, I don't watch a lot of those because a lot of the big name toy reviewers that get free product from a company to review tend to forget that price is a factor. They're getting it for free. They don't want to stop getting toys for free. So therefore, everything has to be positive. And if there's a negative, the negative gets buried way down low. And they may mention it once, or they may mention it and then immediately follow up with something that was great instead, in order to bury that criticism or that complaint or that problem that they have with the product. And there are some guys that do a good job. And I think it's important to note at the beginning of a review from a reviewer, if this is something that was sent to you for a review, or if this is something you paid for with your own money. And part of the review process, I think you should always have that moment at the beginning of the review where someone says, I love this property. I went out and I bought this. I love this property and they sent it to me for review. I'm not familiar with this at all, but they sent it to me. I'm going to take a look at it. I'm not familiar with this, but I saw it in the store and it was only a couple bucks, so I decided to buy it. Like, I always try to throw those types of things in at the beginning of the video so you know where the base level is. A lot of people will get a free product for review on their YouTube channel or Daily Motion or, you know, wherever they're throwing their videos up, and they don't, either they don't disclose that, or they type it at the bottom of the screen, you know, right at the beginning or right at the end, and it's never mentioned again. And to me, that creates a problem, because I'm not out there to watch a commercial for someone else's product. When I see review, I expect a person to actually tell their real opinions on something and not just give you the company line, not just read, you know, every time we get a review sample, it comes with a PR sheet. And I'm just glancing around real quick to see if I have one sitting here. And of course, I just cleaned my desk the other day and they're all, I think, in the trash. But it'll say, you know, these are the key things about it that are great. And this is when it comes out and this is how much it's going to cost and, you know, blah, 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 on. And, if I wanted to read that stuff, I could just go to prnewsline.com or PR Web or any of those type places and just read the press releases myself. I'm watching a review because I want someone's actual opinions and I want to know, how their opinions would stack up to mine and then get an idea of how they feel about a product and if that's a product I want. And that's what we do when we, as consumers, are, you know, again, going to buy a car or buy a computer or buy a new video game system, you know, or whichever. You want to know someone's actual honest feelings about it instead of just being told the public relations spin on everything. And so that's why I don't watch a lot of some of the bigger toy reviewers or comic reviewers or whatever doing videos, because they get free stuff to review and then they tell you how great and awesome it is, and that's what the video is. And that's an issue, you know, I've faced that problem, you know, honestly, looking back on things, you know, back in the new toy smell era, we would do stuff for the show where we would do stuff as a separate video. And you kind of look back on it and you're like, I probably should have said this a little more, you know, let that go a little more, whatever. So it's not like I'm not just coming down on people, you know, because I'm so superior. This is something that I've come across myself looking at some of the stuff I've done. And then I go and I look and I see what other people are doing. I'm like, oh gosh, they're stuck in that same trap. So make sure that the opinions are honest when you're watching something like that. And like I said, I try to be as opinionated as possible in the sense of making sure I'm being honest. If you ever watch the comic book chronicles that I do with theclicknation.com, you'll see a lot of times I'm not very nice. There's a lot of books out there that are just straight garbage, and I'll call them out if I need to. So moving on from that, though, just a brief aside, some people have been asking what happened to Instagram. I was doing Graham comic reviews there for a while. Started out on Vine comic reviews, and then Vine, as everybody knows, imploded. So I moved to Instagram, started doing them there. Instagram is not the place. I've just learned that doing, you know, a couple months of reviews on Instagram, Instagram is not the place. And it could be, but it's not. Because it's a different ecosystem. And here's the problem. Vine was made, first of all, for short videos. That 6-second window that you had to do a video was, to me, I found a lot more creativity in that. When you have all the time in the world, all, you know, all day to do whatever, and you can throw in all these edits and you can do whatever in the background, it kind of loses some of that spontaneity and getting to the point. The thing I loved about Vine was if I was doing a review of a comic, I had 6 seconds to get the point across. And is the point the ongoing story? Is it how bad the artwork is? Is it how good the story is? You know, whatever, you got 6 seconds to throw that out there. And, you know, I tried to make a pretty tight package. Shouldn't have used that term. That is a really bad image to have in your head. I'm sorry, Dirt talking about his tight package. But I really had to have like a, I tried to make a nice presented image, video looping that, you know, got to the point. And the thing about Vine was very social as a social platform in the sense that if you were looking at a comic video, other comic videos would pop up. If you were looking at reviews of stuff, other reviews would pop up. If you went to whatever channel I was on, usually it was just in the art channel because they didn't really have a review or superhero or whatever channel. But if you went to the art channel, you would just scroll through and see all these videos. So there was a good ecosystem for people to find your content hidden on Vine, wherever it may be. And of course, you know, you tweet it, you post it on Facebook, whatever, and you hope that, you know, people are going to find it that way. But Instagram is much more insulated to the people that you're following. So I can say to you on Twitter, come follow me on Instagram. But on Instagram, I can't really say, hey, make sure you like and subscribe, because that's not a feature of Instagram. Instagram is really built on you're going to find the people that you like, and you're going to follow them, and you're going to see their content. And that's how it's built. So trying to branch out to get new people to see things, Instagram just doesn't work for that. I could do YouTube, but YouTube is built on length. There's been a lot of controversies over the past several months that people are saying that the amount of money they make off of YouTube has fallen off because YouTube has become less about subscribers and views and more about minutes watched, which is a big shift for a lot of people because, you know, someone like PewDiePie will have 50 million subscribers or, you know, 100 million or whatever it is. A lot of those people never watch. They subscribe, but they never watch. You know, maybe they watched 2-3 years ago. It's still in their feed. They just don't unsubscribe, but they're still there, whatever. It doesn't matter. But if someone sits down and watches a show that is an hour long and they watch the whole hour, you know, less views for the whole hour actually means more than more views of people watching for 2 minutes. And that is a big shift in the platform that makes a big shift for content creators. So doing 1 minute videos, 2 minute videos, I would have to sit down and do one video where I do, you know, all the books that came out in order to fill a big enough chunk of time. And that's something that the problem is I don't have the time for that on Tuesday because Tuesday is when we get the new print comics in and that's when I record everything. Because, you know, I always think it's more important to stand there and say like, hey, here's this comic that I want to talk about and show the actual comic as opposed to throwing up the cover of the PDF or, you know, whatever, holding up a tablet so you can see that. I do have the PDF here. But having the print comic just kind of shows a little bit more like you actually have it in your hand, you're reading it. So I try to wait until I have the print copies to actually do the videos, but my Tuesdays schedules have kind of changed a little bit and whatever. And Tuesdays are a lot harder. I just don't have the time to sit there and do an hour long show on a Tuesday, which is why Vine was great. 6 second videos in, out, gone. But I mean, I don't know if Twitter is a good way to do that, but does Twitter have the same cross-pollination? I guess if people like it and retweet it, then it'll show up for other people. So that may be a possibility. But, you know, again, Snapchat is something you got to follow. It doesn't seem to cross-pollinate. So I don't know. Is there a good platform? I mean, does anybody know of a good platform where you can do quick burst videos, not necessarily Vine 6 seconds. You know, I do Instagram, I do them a minute long. But something that's gonna cross, because YouTube doesn't want the short videos. Instagram doesn't cross into other viewers very well. Is Twitter my only option? Is it worth it to build a Twitter channel that's just built on comic reviews? I mean, I don't know. But I want to hear your feedback. So again, tweet me at PCN_dirt. Send me an email, dirt@popculturenetwork.com. Comment on the YouTube video. Send me, leave a voicemail message. I was going to say, send me an email. I was like, I think I just did that. Yeah. Voicemail message. Area code 217-953-4025. In fact, let me put that number up here. 1-217-415. Did I do that right? Yeah. Oh, not 41. Whoa, was that my cell phone? 953-4025. I think I may have just said my cell phone number on the show. I'm going to have to go back. I may have to edit this episode. But let's switch here. So you can always leave a voicemail number, area code 217-953-4025. And 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, there's a bug in my house flying around. What is that? Is that a bee? Is there a bee in my house? What? Is that a wasp? Go away. I don't know what this is. There's something flying around in my house. I thought it was a ladybug at first, but I don't think it is. We may cut this show short. All right. Last thing that I want to talk about this morning before we take off from here, because we're not quite done yet. But we're talking about WrestleMania. A couple people came on and they were like, I thought WrestleMania was great. You know, who are you to say that WrestleMania was bad? What do you know about wrestling? You're just some guy on the internet, which, I mean, that's fair. I mean, that's a valid criticism. Anybody is just anybody on the internet if you don't know who they are. It doesn't really make any difference. So why do I think I might know something about wrestling? Well, because I've been involved in professional wrestling. In 2002, I debuted with New Midwest Wrestling as a manager known as Professor Philip H. Dempsey. And I know I'm breaking kayfabe here. Some of the guys are going to get mad at me for doing this. But nonetheless, I worked for about 6 years regularly doing shows as a manager until about 2008, in which I, you know, walked away from it. Just, you know, I had kids, I had, you know, two little kids and a job and a wife, you know, and it was just one of those things where it's like, okay, I'm going to take some time off from this. In 2011, I was asked to come back to do some events. I did some shows in 2011, and then I retired. And in professional wrestling, it's always in quotes when you retire. In 2015, I guess it is, I started getting messages and calls from Central Illinois Professional Wrestling. They are a group based in Kincaid, Illinois, and they asked me if I'd be willing to come and do their shows. And I was like, well, you know, I'm retired, whatever. And they said, no, we want you to come. They really liked the character I did back in the day. A lot of the guys I used to work with, they were working down there and they said, you know, come do these shows. It's a small town in the middle of nowhere, but it's like a half hour from everything, you know? So it's in actually a pretty good spot, technically, for being out in the middle of nowhere. But I started working there. I was a manager for a while. Then the guy who was the president of the company, who was just a character in storyline, he wanted to, you know, retire, take time off, step back, whatever. So they asked me to become president. So I became president. And then after a couple months, they said, you know what? We'd really like you to take over booking. And I don't know if all of this was a setup just to get me to take over booking. But booking, for those of you who don't know, the idea is back in the day, there was a guy who knew, you know, who was going to win, who was going to lose, would put together those matches, and he would write them in a book. And he would carry that book around with him so that he always knew what was going on. And getting that book was always important, because if you held the book, if you were the guy doing the booking, then you had control over someone's career, whether or not they were going to be a good guy or a bad guy, whether or not they were going to be popular and pushed up the card or unpopular and pushed down the card. And so it just became, you know, you're the booker because you carry the book, because you come up with the matches. And so they asked me to take over that part and do the storytelling. And I said, sure. You know, I'd done it a little bit before, back in 2008, right? 2007, 2008, somewhere in there, whenever it was. And, I said, sure, you know, why not? I'll give it a shot. So this past weekend, just a couple days ago, we had CIPW's Tactical Elite, which, by the way, I didn't come up with the name for the show. So that is something that the owners do. Anyway, one of the key things, though, being a booker is dealing with last minute changes. They always happen. The eight guys you see on here, pretty much the regulars, guys we can count on to always be there. Well, except for the new guy. This guy right here on the edge, Matt Harmon, he's new. We just brought him in last month and then pushed him up higher this month because we needed somebody in a spot and he seemed like a good guy to fill it. So we put him there. But we had a pretty good idea of what the show was going to be. 3 days before the show, I throw up, like, here's the basic idea of who's going to fight who. Changes. This guy can't make it. Oh, I'm stuck with my kids. I can't be there. I've got to go to a wedding. I'll be there late. Can you move me to somewhere else on the show? All of this stuff starts flowing in at the last minute. So then you start going, okay, now I have to make these changes. So change, I'm going to put this guy here. I'm going to change this match from a three-way to a two-way because this guy's gone, but I'll take his tag team partner and put him here and, you know, whatever. And you rework certain parts of the show. And then day of the show, because we had 3 days before, 2 days before, now it is day of the show. And it's like, hey, we were going to do this other show in Indiana, but the guy who runs it has never shown up. You know, we've been here for like 4 hours waiting for the guy. He's not here. The venue's closed. There's no ring. There's nothing to set up. We want to come over and be in your show tonight. And it's like, all right, well, suddenly we've got three more guys in a show that's already complete. And so, you know, okay, we'll take these three guys and we'll put them in a match. And then like, oh my gosh. So these three guys that are now going to be a part of the show, we need to make this guy who's going to run in here, run in on this one. So there's a storyline that makes sense. So then this guy can't do a run in here, but then we're going to change this one to mirror this match because these are the two tag team partners we had to split up and put in singles matches. So that works as one big storyline there. And so I deal every month, as we do monthly shows, every month with booking a wrestling show, with juggling talent, with last-minute changes of taking this guy out, redoing the storyline. There have been times when an entire match for 3 weeks was, hey, this guy's going to have a mystery partner. Who's the mystery partner going to be? Nobody knows who this mystery opponent's going to be. Who's this mystery opponent he's going to take on? Who's this guy? 2 days before the show, the entire card has to change, and suddenly it's guy A versus guy B. No mystery, no question, because that storyline has been dumped because we got to rework everything to make sense. And I'm the type of guy, it not only has to make sense from show to show for, you know, this guy to wrestle this guy to wrestle this guy, it needs to make sense as part of the you know, monthly shows, as these episodes. But I also want the card to make sense as you go through match to match. I don't want to put the opening half hour of the show, which is a whole bunch of singles matches with no storyline, and then the second half of the show is the Illinois State title, the tag team championships, and the heavyweight championship. You know, you can't book it that way, where it's like, well, the whole first show was incredibly boring and half the people left. But the people who stayed for the second half got a great show. You know what I mean? So I work with balancing those things, trying to make a good monthly show and have it make sense from month to month to month to month. And it's difficult and things change all the time. So I understand this. So when people say, look at this wrestling pay-per-view put on by Company X, and well, they had to make some last-minute changes in order to make something fit so that they could squeeze something in and whatever, I know what that's like. I do understand that. Now, I will totally grant you that doing it in an arena like this is completely different than doing it in an arena full of 66,000 people, in Orlando, under the Florida sun, you know, with an 80-yard ramp going down to the ring. Like, I get it. Like, there is a difference between the shows that we do and the shows that they do. But having said that, there are so many things that WWE cheaps on, cheats on, that they've given up on because they've gotten to a point where a lot of their writers, they're not only writing Raw, SmackDown, 205 Live, NXT. I don't know if there are any like superstars or Worldwide or Thunder. I don't know. I don't know what WWE, you know, third rung shows are, but or fourth rung maybe, I guess, at this point. Like, I don't know how many of those like international syndicated shows may still exist. I don't know if there are any. They may all be gone by this point. But then plus they have to do the house shows and they have to do, you know, the pay-per-views. Like, I understand there's a lot of stuff that they have to juggle that they have to reuse, but a good rematch between two guys who had an excellent match a couple weeks ago on Raw is still better than some of these, like, hey, this guy only shows up, you know, every 6 months when we need him to do something because we don't really have a good opponent for somebody. So we're just going to shoehorn him in with a top tier talent who doesn't have anybody to face at WrestleMania just to fill a spot on the card. So that's where a lot of my criticisms come from. Again, I get it. They're a multi-million dollar, billion dollar company, and I'm a dude doing this show on YouTube for you guys. Like, I understand that there is a difference, but that's where it comes from. You know, I do know that there is certain things that you can do to make it better. And just throw out, like, this is what most wrestling shows look like. They're in a gym, maybe a bingo hall. You got your bleachers, you got your folding chairs, you've got your mats and tarps by the side of the ring. You know, you've got like how many people is that? You know, 100 people, maybe at the most. And you don't even see like the wheelchair section off the side. We have, you know, we always have space open for people that are in a home, a group home that come in and they have their own little spot where we let them sit. You know, ROH. A lot of their shows, if you look, do not have a really big crowd. They just have nice presentation on a lot of their stuff. TNA does not have really big crowds. They just like to push them all around in the right way on camera to make them look good. Obviously, they have more than what we do in the South Fork High School Gymnasium in Kincaid, Illinois. But nonetheless, that's what we do. So I'm not completely talking out of my butt when I do this stuff. I mean, yes, I am. I understand in certain ways, but not 100%. So there's some background to what I'm doing and some of the things that I'm working on. So again, if you have any other questions, comments, there's that bug. It's it's just like a little aphid. I see. It's one of those little flat things. It's like crawling around. I was going to check Twitter. Not now. Tablet turned off and I'm not reaching over. I hate bugs. I just hate. They're creepy. They move too fast a lot of times where, you know, you're not really sure, you know, where they're going and you try to reach out to smack them or whatever and they zip super fast and sometimes they come right at you. Don't like them, especially hate spiders. I'm that guy. I know. Spiders more scared of you. I don't think so. I don't think that's how that works. So anyway, I'm going to try to keep this guy on the tablet. I'm going to throw him outside, but I'm going to thank you guys for watching. Oh, he's moving towards my thumb. I'm going to scream like a little girl. I got to get out of here. I want to thank you guys for watching, and I will see you some other time. This bug doesn't kill me.